Hello, everyone out there. This is Cindy Solomon here once again with another fantastic Gumbo Cast. This is Gumbo Cast number 4, starting on August 1st, 2019. Alongside me once again is the dominant one, Jessica Brand.
Mm-hmm. As always, and always more strategies, more ways to count the cards, and more ways to find the games in your favor. That's me and me for you.
Yeah, and we'll explain more about that when we talk about the Game Show Throwdown and what we did to help out with the Throwdown. Also on the show, we got Elvin Warfel and John Quinn becoming the new EPs of Price is Right and Let's Make a Deal, respectively. We are also talking about more HQ woes with them turning down new funding. Just a strats, man. We will talk about Card Sharks and play with a nice little app from GameShowTheory.com. And also primetime and Emmy nominations. Who is nominated for what? It was a really fun weekend that we spent with the Throwdown, but we'll talk more about that later on. So what else have you been up to, Jessica?
Not much. I mean, you know me. I usually do the trivia basically day in, day out. I mean, I'm living this stuff so I can learn it and eventually, hopefully, I'll become a super champ one day. That is one of my few goals in my life, but I want to make sure that happens. I'm probably not good enough for it yet, but if I keep getting better and better, I mean, King Jennings said what he did is 30, I'm 27, I got plenty of time to make it, so.
Practice your buzzer finger. Practice that buzzer.
I mean,
to wrap up the season in Jeopardy, we'll talk about that right now because I mentioned it in the latest episode of Game Show Gumbo, which is up right now. After the Tournament of Champions roster was released, we already have two qualifiers for the 2020 or 2021 tournament, and I think with all the contenders coming out, should probably be 2020. The last game of the season, 6-time champion crowned with over 135,000, with all three of them missing a pretty easy Final Jeopardy. And the quip of Alex Trebek with a non-Jewish ship. It's kind of interesting to me that we're starting to see more streaks happening nowadays.
Well, I mean, I guess that's the advances of medicine and technology as we know it for individuals, I guess. Like, for the longest we're going to live. I mean, it's true, right? Like,
yeah. More silver streaks, if you know what I mean. Anyway. I have no idea what I was talking about. But yeah, it's kind of interesting to see because back in, I'll just say back 5 years ago, it was almost unheard of to have a, like multi-six, seven, eight-day champions in a season. And we had that the past few years, past 2 years actually. Josh Hill was a seven-time champion, and don't sleep on him for the Tournament of Champions. I think he's, like I said last Gumbo Cast, he's got a really good shot at winning. If not Holzhauer, it's him.
I mean, he's your dark horse. I think part of it, too, and I don't know if it's personal experience, it very well might be, or if it's just a general change in the show itself. I feel like Jeopardy, because it feels like it's loosening a little bit on the strings of difficulty overall, it becomes more of a case of who has the best skill with the signaling device, which at its core, I guess that's all right. But if that becomes the case, those who are elite at a specific monolithic skill are going to dominate as a result. Because that's what made James great, right? That he was great with the signaling device. And
not only that, you're also forgetting the big thing about James is that he applied a perfect strategy.
He did, but I mean, I guess what I'm saying, though, in specific respect to what that can mean for players as a broader base, if you're great at the signaling device more than ever, relative to the difficulty on the board, it's going to create for more dominant champions as an actual cause and effect. And that's independent of board selection strategy, which is important to talk about, too, when you talk about James. But I believe that that's ultimately secondary. Because if you don't have good signaling device control, you can't execute on what clue is selected next. And I agree it's important. I just think it's like the flower relative to the chocolate and the cake. So,
right. And you know what I think is the best way to practice that? Well, certain things is the clicker on the top of a electronic, not electronic, but a mechanical pen or pencil like I have. That's a good way to do it. But if you want something that's more akin to what the buzzers are in Jeopardy, go to a local PC store, and they'll have old-school joysticks, which handle like the Jeopardy buzzers. Just get one of those joysticks, and you can practice with that. And plus, they also make for good flight sticks when you want to play Flight Simulator.
That's interesting. As someone who's actually never handled one of those, but has handled a signaling device, that's interesting you say that. Like, I mean, I take your word on it. Mine, personally, is to use a toilet paper roll plunger, which is what Jason Block told me to do, actually.
Good.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Like, it's so simple. Everyone has that. Now, the thing I've heard from other people is that they use the pens that everyone gets at the audition, which is, I think, a really neat idea, too, because you even got the Jeopardy logo on there, too, so. Mm-hmm. And they're perfect, like, little ballpoint pens that you can mash like that to try to keep up with the players on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I personally use the, so what I would do when I didn't have my toilet paper roll is I would just smack my couch, like, really hard, which is a broader area, so in theory it could take longer. Just to compare myself with James, actually. And James is who I use as a benchmark when I'm trying to practice signaling device, because that's the level I want to get to, along with the Fritz strategies that he speaks of. Like, if you haven't heard of Fritz and the buzzer strategies, they're incredible. You've heard of him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Fritz Holznagel, I believe it is, yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, read his stuff if you haven't. Like, it's so great. When he did the final wager stuff a few years ago, that was definitely worth seeing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is how you do it, basically.
Yep. Also want to let everybody know that various things have been updated. I updated the Twitter, because we're doing a bit of a changeover now, which I started today while we're recording this. The Twitter handle has now been changed over from Game Show Garbage to Game Show Gumbo. And today we started phase two of the changeover. The Patreon is now Game Show Gumbo. The Discord is now Game Show Gumbo. And more importantly, the YouTube is now Game Show Gumbo. So...
just surround me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you knew about these changes. You knew I was going to make them.
I did, yeah. I did. I'm just quoting Alan Menken. So,
speaking of interesting authors and books, another thing that happened to me a couple of last week, actually, I was on a date, and I came, and after the date, I got drenched, but I came home to a nice package from my friend Jamie. She gave me a miniature helmet from the Charlotte Knights.
Let's go out in Charlotte, because I know she's out in North Carolina.
Well, she was. She's back home now. She got home today.
Okay.
But I'm a big wrestling fan, but she also sent me a couple of wrestling things. She sent me this book from the Crockett Foundation, which is called When Wrestling Was Wrestling. And it's a nice picture book of a lot of the classic wrestlers from the Mid-Atlantic and Jim Crockett Productions territory. A lot of great wrestlers like the Briscoe Brothers, Ric Flair, Ole and Arn Anderson, Blackjack Mulligan, Paul Jones, Rufus R. Freak Train Jones. It's just a lot of wonderful photos. But while I was flipping through it, there was this little thing that was in it. And it is a postcard-style picture autographed by all of the living Crocketts. From...
I didn't expect to get that.
Jackie Crockett, who took all the photographs for the book. Joanna Crockett. David Crockett, who was the announcer, alongside Tony Schiavone and Bob Caudle for a lot of those programs. And the man himself, Jim Crockett Jr., who produced a lot of it. But also in there is something that surprised me, was an autographed photo of one of the best mullets in wrestling right now and a really awesome wrestler in Brian Pillman Jr. Autograph 8.5 by 11 photo. Fantastic stuff. And I thank her daily for that.
Yeah, that's very nice of her to send that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure she appreciates the gratitude that you've given her as well.
Oh yeah. She does. I mean, I love her, and I don't know how she feels about me, but I love her, and she knows that, and it's just an interesting thing going on. But we need to move on because I could talk for about 3 hours about her and all of our lives, but there's other times for us to talk about that. We need to jump into the meat of the matter, so to speak.
Yep, off with the bun, and the soup is starting to get cold, so we don't want to send that back to the kitchen for microwave, so let's get on it.
Nope. Microwave? Ugh. That's the sign of a bad restaurant when they microwave something. I've had that happen
exactly.
Before.
That's why we don't want that.
Right. All right, Britt, we're starting things off. We talked a couple of shows ago where Mike Richards left. The Price is Right and Let's Make a Deal. He went to Sony. And we had an interesting debate on who would be the new EP / showrunners for both Price is Right and Let's Make a Deal. Now, we thought Jennifer Mullen or Gabby Johnston, who does Family Feud. Jennifer Mullen is an executive producer on other things as well. But we also mentioned the name Evelyn Warfel, who was the second-in-command to Mike Richards on Price is Right. She is now the executive producer / showrunner on The Price is Right, making her the first ever EP / showrunner in Price is Right history. And second EP / showrunner for a Fremantle show, I do believe, because Gabby was first for Family Feud when I think she took over for... Who did she take over for? I forget who she took over for. But he used to... I forget his name. But the big thing was... John Quinn, who used to be the EP for Celebrity Name Game, who is currently the EP for Card Sharks, is now the... Pressure Luck. Is now the showrunner for Let's Make a Deal.
Who, and, you know, of course, he has a big background with Edmund O, too, actually. He had a big history with them. That didn't get reported. Yeah.
Interesting.
Dayton graduated in 1996. So he's pretty young, actually. So, again, I mean, that kind of gives more evidence to that. And it kind of makes sense. I think we're going to see this in broader business soon. But companies are starting to hire younger because the baby boom generation is starting to get closer and closer to retirement age. Just based upon demographics and age, I'm not going to really dig into any politics of that and what you might think of that either way. But it's something to note of trend that's going on with big businesses. And if we see TV do it behind the scenes, then probably other businesses are just going to follow suit just as a general culture message. And I thought that was interesting, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. According to Deadline, who actually broke the news, Jennifer Mullen, who is the CEO of Fremantle, which I will admit I made a mistake. I thought she was an EP somewhere. I didn't know she was the CEO. She goes in an interview with Deadline, who broke the story. We are fortunate to have such creative and dedicated talent at the company. When looking to fill these roles, we didn't need to go far. Evelyn and John have been longtime valued members of the team, and I can't wait to see how they flourish in their new roles. And I got to be honest, I'm looking forward to this. Now, we know a couple of our friends went behind the scenes on Let's Make a Deal last week. Jason Block and Chico Alexander from Game Show Newsnet. They know what's happening with Season 11, how John Quinn's going to handle the ship. We might have to ask them later on about how things are going to go and how it's going to appear on screen. Are you bullish as I am about these two shows?
More so with Let's Make a Deal. I had a few friends who went to, I think it was what's going to be the season premiere, actually. They said it went very smoothly and so forth, so I heard good things there. Golden, excuse me, The Price is Right, I expect to be more of the same. I think Fremantle is going to put itself in there a little bit. Is I think you're not going to really see, and I don't mean this as a slight towards Price, I just think it's just going to keep on doing what it's doing, like an old steam engine that keeps on chugging and keeps on doing its job. And I honestly expect more of the same from Let's Make a Deal. I mean, nothing against these two, and if anything, it's a testament to what I think of what these hires are going to be. I don't think we're going to see that much of a difference about how the shows are approached. And that's, I mean, not that change is bad, but given what they're doing for younger demographics right now, that's great.
Oh, yeah.
So.
I honestly think that we are going to see more cross-pollination of both shows, in my opinion. And what I mean by that is, remember Mashup Week a few years ago?
Oh yeah, that was very fun. I thought that was one of the best ideas the show's had in a long time.
I want to see that come back. And I think that idea was from Evelyn Warfel, who, while reading the Deadline article, has an excellent and extensive game show background. She's helped produce more than a dozen titles. One of those titles was as a supervising producer on Let's Make a Deal. And we have some more upgrades in status and position. Adam Sandler, who was the show's director, he's now going to be the new co-executive producer. So he's now going to be moved up the chain into Warfel's role. And this is after he won two Daytime Emmy Awards for Outstanding Directing in a Game Show. He will continue to be the director, though, so he now is going to play a dual role. And alongside John Quinn on Let's Make a Deal, Chris Ahern and Graham Shaw, along with Jennifer Langhold, all three of them will be co-executive producers, or all four of them, actually. But John Quinn will be the main guy in charge. And although it is expected to debut in September.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. Like, I think there's, you know, I think there's so many things that can be done with these shows that haven't been explored for better or worse. I mean, but I think what we're seeing is definitely a move in the right direction. I guess the only thing I wish with Price from what I had seen so far is that I'm not too happy the College Rivals is coming back again, unfortunately, for season 48. But I mean, that's, I mean, usually I very much turn taken a 180 on when I think about the theme shows. I mean, it's not, I don't want them to be every show like what Wheel does, for instance. But, you know, how they do them in moderation as I think about the right amount. And I mean, I'm glad to see most of the old standbys and some new ones, of course, good to rotate them in, are being brought in on the show. So, and Dio does that very well as well. So, good for them.
I just hope they don't go overboard as well, especially with the kind of feels propish, like when they had preschoolers on for Kids Week. To me, that just felt like a massive prop. Then they just made the kids feel like massive props than anything else. Like, you kind of get uncomfortable with stuff like that on game shows.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, we are going to have another Kids Week scheduled for April 20th to the 24th next year. Obviously, don't know any details, but I would imagine it'd be like the ones in the past. Because right now, it's where we have. We have the Breast Cancer Awareness Special, as always, on October 1st. I wish they wouldn't do it for Susan G. Komen, but that's my own personal thing. The Halloween Special, which is always, I think, one of the best ones they do, along with April Fool's on a routine basis. Veterans Day Show, College Rivals is a one-off this year. And you know what I like about what they did with it this year in terms of timing? They put it at the end of November. And that makes perfect sense because the final week of the college football season, you know, that's rivalry week. You got the Bragg Bowl, you got the game, you got Notre Dame USC, you got the Egg Bowl, you got all this good stuff in college football. It's
The
my
Iron
favorite.
Bowl.
Well, that's the Bragg Bowl. We don't call it that because Shug Jordan called it the Iron Bowl. I root for Alabama. Bear Bryant called it the Brag Bowl because you got to brag the rest of the season. But anyway,
True.
you only have two holiday shows this year. That to me is actually kind of a surprise, but I mean that's fine. One on Christmas Eve is a very nice touch. You have Baby Shower Show on March 20th, which I think that's kind of nice because baby showers are always done with pastels and so forth, and that kind of goes with the Easter. That's going to be that time of year. It evokes familiar feelings. So from a strictly marketing perspective, as me as someone behind the scenes, that totally makes sense in terms of marketing. The Kids Week, as I mentioned, the Mother's Day special. And I believe that's all we have. Oh no, we have the Summer Beach Party on June 19th, and then we have the 4th of July special that's going to be on, July 3rd because next year it will be a Sunday normally. And the season, aside from the schedule, is going to end on June 29th. And that to me is interesting because it's actually not going to be like, it's going to actually be ending on the same week as the July 4th special for the first time in a long time, actually. Because it's 29, 30, 1, 2, 3, so Monday into Friday.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense to me.
Oh,
I'm just hoping Dream Car Week. There's 2 weeks that I absolutely love, and that's Dream Car Week and Big Money Week.
those are great. Those are absolutely great. I
I
mean, those
just
are such an
wish
excellent surprise.
somebody would win Plinko. Somebody hit it for 200,000. Come on, it's not that difficult.
I want to see the daytime record fall in all of game shows. Price has not done it yet. They've gotten so close. Maybe this will be the year.
Daytime record is 249,000.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's around that ballpark, but that's just it.
I think Mort Kamen's has it.
Yes.
Two hundred and
And that's.
forty-nine,
They could
just a
do that
couple bucks
too. You
shy
put
of a
it up
quarter
as a
mil.
car. Yep. They could do that. Put up a nice six-figure card, double showcase your showcase, and you win. It's doable, folks.
Absolutely. All right. So let's move on to. We talked about something happy. Now we need to talk about something more closer to your vest and something a little more depressing. July 23rd, news broke from TubeFilter and Digiday. Actually, Digiday originally reported it. TubeFilter spread it throughout the interwebs. Apparently, HQ Trivia is struggling. Struggling to the fact that they actually just turned down new funding from Lightspeed Venture Partners, who originally gave them an injection, I think around this time last year or a couple of years ago,
I'm
February
not sure who the original
2018.
funder was. I'll say that
Huh?
either way. I'm not sure who the original funder was. I know that they had gotten a venture capitalist to get them a lot of money. And I'm not quite sure why this was turned down. I know it was being stubborn because I think it meant less creative control for Russ ultimately, which is certainly an interesting. That's certainly an interesting parallel to the politics internally that go on in HQ for sure.
Right, because Russ is dead man walking. He's not going to be around much longer. If I
Probably.
was Russ, then I'd be like, get me out of here.
I mean, he likes control. I mean, and I'm not judging him for that. He just likes to be in control of things. I mean, it's certainly interesting in the respect that, if you can believe rumors, the HQ fan source on Twitter, which has gotten things right before, you can take it or you can leave this, is that eventually they're going to have season 5. They're doing away with the jackpot format. God, I hope this is wrong. Because I mean, it's hard to make money, but it does provide big money if you do well enough. And that Russ is going to be out there, going to have questions that have multiple correct answers. So, for instance, and this is the one I thought of, which of the following are vowels? A, C, and E. And obviously, A and E are both vowels. So, and then it's going to be 12 question games again. And again, I really hope not. I mean, I really like this format. It's hard. It really is, but assuming they pay, that's granted, that's a big if these days. You can get very handsomely rewarded in a short amount of time every single night if you do well enough.
Right. I think that's kind of why they're going back to the 12 question format.
Well, how
Because
so?
that means, well, it also depends on the jackpot. If they're going back to a modest jackpot, like say $1,000
Well, if
a
they're doing
game.
that, well, that'd be a big drop compared to what they're doing. Because usually, an average night, is still under $5,000 a night with them, actually. Granted, there are a few that are above it, but that's I honestly think that's the exception. Because the average game, I would say, these days since Jackpot, not including the $100,000 they didn't pay out. They didn't pay out any of it currently. But including the $60,000 that was won, the thought is that it's probably a little bit over $5,000 a game since they started because of that skew data. But if we treat that, even with that, it's probably only closer to $6,000, and most nights it's not close to that. They've had nights where it's been under $4,000. Most nights it's around that 4,500, 4,600 sweet spot range. So right now they're actually keeping a decent budget with what they're doing, and it's remarkable, actually, really.
If we're going back to the 12-question format, then they got to have something like $2,500 to $3,000 just for a normal game. We'll just say a normal game, it's 3 grand.
I don't think they're that desperate yet, and even then, that'd be a mess. Because you look at what HQ Words offers a game, 2,000 a game. HQ Sports offers 1,000. Those games are lucky if you get 50 cents out of them. I don't think people would have the appeal to that. I think you'd have to make it a bigger pot than that.
Maybe 5,000 a game.
Yeah, I really think their budget is still the standard 5,000 a game it was before they switched to this format.
Okay, so we'll just say 5,000. They go back to 5,000 a game because that could get their jackpots back under control, where they could actually pay them out and not hand-wring for the next 90 or so days.
Yeah, I mean, they seem like they're absolute in not paying them out because they don't have the money for them. But I mean, I don't know. I don't think this situation because they and I don't understand why people are turned off by it. But the fact is, they are. They've scared off so many people with this format, and the numbers are not going to really change that. Trying something old to bring in back people is really not going to make that much of a difference at this point. We've had the point where it's been past exponential decay, and there really isn't much of a road of recovery at this point. And they're still doing well with the numbers, even if a lot of them are bots, because any other app is going to be lucky to get 20,000, and HQ always gets like 220,000 at this point per show. I mean, I just hope that's not true, because I really don't want to settle for what's going to be lucky with such a bot-heavy population to be $5, maybe that. That's why I'm not inclined to believe it. I could see maybe what they did originally with the jackpot format, and I'm kind of surprised they shouldn't stick with this, although I understand why they didn't, actually. But they should have stuck with what was really going to be what started as a $15,000 jackpot. And that didn't seem like it would break the bank for them. But they figured if they start adding thousands and thousands to this, because every week or so, it adds about 5,000 to the jackpot, which is now at about 235,000. But that means they're actually saving enough money, even if they can offer. I think eventually you're going to have to give it away at some point because you're still going to have that egg on your face if you wind up having this massive jackpot that doesn't wind up being given away. I mean, you can't just reduce it down to 5,000 without there not being an aftershock to that. To the base that still plays this format, because there is obviously a group, and a large group at that, beyond the bots, that obviously enjoys this format or they wouldn't be playing it.
Right. And what a problem is that they're having is cash influx. I know what they're trying to do with the microtransactions are going to be starting, I think, August or September when they
Maybe.
implement, like.
I'm waiting for the subscriptions. I'm looking forward to those because I think there's a short-term game that can be played from them.
Right.
But I would honestly pay for jackpot games. And again, I mean, I'm not someone who's going to bail at 5 cents or $3.
Maybe at $50.
Personally, not at $50. It has to be three figures for me to even consider it. But
Okay.
that's me personally as an individual. For a lot of people, it is, though, because we see a lot of offers past Question 18 that are, whether they're bots or not, but it's just the trend of the behavior. Bots or users or whoever, like the vast majority of people, will take around a $20 offer when that's on the table. And
True.
for me, that's always an instant slam on the no.
Now, ever since it's found, now Digiday also reports that ever since its founding, they've gotten 15 million in ad revenues. That's including 10 million in ad revenues, 5 million from in-app purchases. But even with that, you're not making a profit. Guess how much, according to Digiday, the company spends roughly per month to put on the quiz shows. Per month.
Yeah. I think they make enough to justify being a little bit looser on their purse strings, honestly. Not much, but I think they have more room than they're giving themselves credit for. Which is remarkable. Granted, I don't claim to know the talent salaries or the staff salary, which is, you know, I mean, they said they were shrinking staff size, but my response to that is, unfortunate it was for the individuals that lost their jobs. Mm-hmm. How many do you really need to run an app like this? Like, and again, maybe you do need more, but that was my initial thought, that maybe you really don't need that many. If you have an excess amount of people, strictly speaking in terms of a business and not people, maybe that's not a bad thing. And I mean, right. That again, I feel bad for the individuals. I mean, you had Gallo who walked out the door the other day, their marketing director.
Oh.
But I mean, again, I mean, Nick Gallo did a great job with the show. That was a big loss for them. I do wonder what he had done for, I mean, I know he did a really good job. Mm-hmm. But I just wonder what specifically he had done. And again, he is a big loss. Matt Richards was a big fan of him. Everyone who knew him liked him. He was very well respected behind the scenes.
I guess he probably couldn't deal with Yusupov, who has seemed to rub everybody the wrong way. I think they will rebound, but it's got to be post-Russ.
How would you rebound the show? I mean, that's what I'm wondering.
How do you rebound the show?
Yeah, how do you rebound the show? Especially with all the bots that are in there these days. Like,
it's easy. All you have, you might lose the numbers, which you've said in previous shows that numbers are fine, and the higher-ups don't care. But I would do, like, two-tier logins. Like, if you're on a phone, like, you also log in with your phone number.
Well, yeah, that's what you do now. And then they give you a verification code. The thing that they probably could do, and this is what Pop Culture Live, another app that is died did, is that no matter what you did, you have to fill out a W-9 for it. And because of that, bots are want to take amounts that are under 600, because that way they can't be really tracked like that.
Yep.
So there's some federal crime involved in this too. Those people are probably cheating on their income tax. But I mean, why not make that the case for every time someone tries to cash out an initial amount? I mean, it really wouldn't be that big of a bother, and it would remove bots.
Mm-hmm.
I think the downside for HQ is, and maybe they don't want to admit this, is that their actual numbers are not that great. But I mean,
probably not.
Do you really want to be an accomplice to what's probably going to result in tax fraud from probably a good number of people? Like, there's a dark angle to that in the legal that I don't think people have talked about too much yet. Certainly not in my circles, I know that.
Right. Well, that's our HQ news. We will have more later on.
Yep, and I will try to keep on winning. So it's harder these days in all the apps, because rip confetti.
Yep.
But there's still, let's see, right now on my phone I have 12 different apps that I can play, and I make money from. So.
There you go. Those little wins equal big wins. And that sound means we need to talk about Game Show Throwdown.
Yes, indeed. I mean, I played 24 hours playing these, but they went the full 25, I tell you what.
Oh, yeah. Well, they played 26.
Yeah, that's right, because it went on so long with the chase in particular, which was, that was great fun to watch on top of that.
Yeah, also the end game pressure luck, when they went to super pressure luck, went a bit long as well.
Yeah, that's typical, it feels like. And I mean that is a good thing too. I always like that goes long, but it tends to run long.
Even with the truncated question format where it's three questions instead of just four. Combined in-house donations, previous donations, and online donations, over $6,000 raised this time around, and we helped out with that in certain aspects. We'll talk about the meat of the matter for the Throwdown in a bit and the future of the Throwdown. But we both had a hand in helping out the Throwdown in various ways. I was brought on by Travis Griffin and Kimberly Dana Baum to do video editing, like the hype package that you saw on YouTube, or not YouTube, but on their Facebook page and various other pages. I did that one to the tune of Panic at the Disco's Greatest Show remix.
Yeah.
Mute when you're on the
This is the greatest
this
show.
show. Yeah, but
Yeah.
we had that had to be muted when we played it over on
Yeah.
Twitch.
Yeah, we had to be careful about that because, yeah, I can't imagine the consequences that if the stream got taken down and then the copy. Oh. Yeah. But it was such a really good video. If you haven't seen it, because it's still up on Facebook in particular, give that a look. It's a good way to get you hyped up for watching really any game show. Because, I mean, it's great too, because as much as it was designed for the Throwdown, for obvious reasons, it really is a great presentation of what game shows are and what the big moments are like and the natural humanity that comes out of them.
Thank you for that.
My pleasure.
And now we get to talk about how you beat my ass.
Yeah.
Because on
So we
June
did.
20th, July 20th, excuse me, July 20th, me and Jessica played a game of Luck of the Draw, which Tim Connolly, aka LuGuru, does. And what he did, he used that to raise money for our various Children's Miracle Network hospitals. Mine was the Seattle Children's Hospital. Yours was, I think, the
The Hasbro Children's Hospital of Providence.
Yes, you gotta enjoy the great rooms that they have. Like, there's rooms based around Operation and Monopoly and Scrabble and
Exactly.
Picturica, among others.
Yes. I mean, because I, if you didn't know, like Hasbro's is quartered right around here, so. I mean, they're a big, obviously they're big donors because they gave their name to the hospital, but it's a great place for the fun of the kids so they don't really have to think about what they're going through, so.
Yep. And the show started out well. Both of us ended up tied at the end around $1,550, I think. And then round two happened. And the cards fell in your lap.
Yep. And then I started to count the cards like I would with blackjack. So what I did for that, and
Oh,
obviously
you
if
did
you,
more than that. We're going to talk about that.
we're going to talk about this. So I partly counted the cards. So I developed a bracket strategy. If you know me, I love to do my strategies, be it for learning trivia or executing game theory. So I had a sheet up of what relative card outcomes would be for each of the six card slots. So you kind of play it like Racco. Two to an ace, basically, and I figured out of what each card, what slot should go in each card given a standardized deck, and if I put that, I would just figure that out that way, and then I matched them up mentally, and then from there I counted the cards like I would with a blackjack deck, relative to the count of the deck, and then I could knew what I could expect based upon the relative cards remaining and relatively to what the placement of the cards would say on top of that, so I combined them and I was able to run the decks pretty efficiently. And I did that with the end game too, actually. And I talked myself out of a $25,000 or $25 donation win. But I basically game theoried the game just a few minutes before the show because it's a great concept for a game and it's very solvable too. And I thought, well, what if I put my own game theory into action on a game like this? And it was incredible to just see it keep falling like that.
This is something you have to talk to Tim about.
Oh yeah, definitely. I would talk with him. I guess I would just want to do a simulation game with him and discuss about how each one goes into its own bracket. So if you're listening or watching this, I guess, you know how tax brackets work, like 0 to 9600 is this, and then 9600 to 19800 is this. So we know in each individual bracket, two and I believe it's a quarter. I don't recall it offhand, remarkably, but I know it's around 2 1/4 suits fall into each one. Because if it's numbered 1 to 6, and I didn't account for the wild card, so my strategy was slightly flawed at the time, admittedly. But based upon standard decks, you want to put 2 1/4 cards in the first slot. So that means 2, 3, and if you've seen somehow 3 4s, a 4, and then you want to copy that times 6. And basically, I was able to replicate that and apply basically standard card counting from that point forward. And because of that, it told me what to anticipate next, relatively speaking, and because I could keep mental track of the card counting in my mind, because it was a mono deck, which makes that incredibly easy to do. You can just aggregate, you can just adjust according to it. So if the count is +1, I know I'm going to be expecting relatively lower cards, so I can adjust basically what my bell curve of normative distribution is accordingly to that. Like, I compare it to a dromedary camel walking. So you know how a dromedary camel has its humps, right? And the hump in this case is representative of the bell curve. So if the camel walks backwards, we know we have a positive count because we're going to be expecting to see it shift to the left in terms of what we see of card distribution, where 2 is on the left-hand side because, you know, it's the lowest end. And if the camel walks forward, we know on a negative count that we're going to see higher cards going forward. And I was able to mentally calculate my bell curve according to what I had seen at the deck at that point. And it really sounds more complicated than it is. Because if we know what the standard value of each position should be, and we can adjust that according to a count mentally, then we just have to shift it little by little. And eventually, once it gets to be enough cards, you can just memorize what the cards are, and you can adjust your according to them. Because each suit only has 4 given cards in it, as opposed to like 16 at an actual blackjack table, quarters of intervals are not too hard, or out of 52 to be more precise. That's roughly a little bit less than a 2%. I believe it's 4.8% offhand of how much we have to adjust each curve. That's really not that bad to do that at a time, and especially given the pace of the game, too. The game gives you time to think, and if you don't have control, then you can adjust your strategy accordingly to that, because you should certainly be less aggressive because you don't have control, you don't have a pass card at that point. I didn't incorporate that yet, but again, it seems very easy to do because you have a wash card that you can take care of. But when you can adjust a curve that's of very normative data, it's not that hard to do mentally. And I think anyone could try that strategy. Is it foolproof? No, of course not, because carding cards is not foolproof. It only gives you a roughly 9 to 11% edge on the house in any given hand. But you'd rather have it than not.
True. By the way, I do have a
And I
question
mean
for you.
I Oh yeah, sorry, go ahead.
When did you graduate in? What was your major?
my All right, so I did French because je parle français aussi, and I did finance. Now, finance, I also learned how to hedge fund there, and I operated some software that requires you to do 19-step equations called the Black-Scholes Options Pricing Model. And you talk about guys like, regardless of what you think about them, like Martin Struskelly, you talk about what the guys and boys in Wall Street are doing. They're doing the same stuff that I was doing, and I was able to basically take advantage of that and look at what my projections relative to my earnings would be on a given stock, so I was guaranteed to make money every time if I picked the right option, because it could simulate them something called Black-Scholes Greeks, and each Greek letter is representative of a different element, like theta, delta, and they don't necessarily mean like change, or like they don't necessarily mean like frequency, like lambda nu does. Frequency and length, like lambda nu does, but they mean things like inflation, expected projection, the base value of the stock, the strike price, which is the amount you would get if you would sell it, and so forth. And of course, my father was a statistician. He did work with Netflix, with Yum Brands, with Sprint, and I've done some statistics courses. And of course, I make my own stats that Major League Baseball uses now. So, I mean, this is just kind of my background and stuff. Not only because I've been good at it, but because I've been trained in it professionally. So,
Absolutely works for me. Not sure if anybody in who's listening or watching understood it, but good for that. Good for you.
Oh, no, boy. Welcome to Educational Hour, everybody. I mean, I try to educate folks. Like, I'm not going to give you the plain, boring vanilla stuff. I'm going to give you some pistachios with some caramel swirls in there. No one expects that.
Nobody suspects the Spanish Inquisition. Okay.
Exactly.
Now to the throwdown. The event went off with a couple of hitches.
Yeah.
It was very fun to watch, very fun to see take place.
I stayed up for all 26 hours. I got a little bit of sleep in between the events on some downtime, but I was a trooper out there. I was nuts.
I couldn't. After Drunken Password, I had to fall asleep.
A full half gallon of Mountain Dew Code Red here. I did it.
You drank a 2 liter of Code Red.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. I cut out soda. Otherwise, that's what I would have done. So I was just drinking, like, green tea and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's helped me lose a few pounds, by the way.
Yeah. There you go.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite moments was the chase.
And... Yeah, Chase had a few of my friends there. Very glad for Maddie and Pam, especially. And everyone was great to see there. But those two I was really glad to see succeed the way they did.
Mm-hmm. Was it like grand total $248 off that game to charity alone? Like $124 by Kimberly, who doubled and then redoubled. And then.
Which is awesome.
Yep. And then Brad Rutter threw in another $124. I think both of them together just threw in an additional dollar, making even $250.
Yeah.
Also, the greatest question known to man. I'm going to pull this up. The game was remote control.
This Shaggy Dog story of a question, though. I mean, I thought it was never going to end. I mean, I thought, I'm like, this is like the whole throwdown right here. Just cancel the rest of the programming. Oh my god. It was amazing.
It's just... unbelievable. So,
like, I mean, what hour do you come up with this? Like, how much work do you put into this? Like, that was the most nuts thing I'd ever seen. And yet it was answered very quickly and efficiently, too. Great job, JJ. I know you're out there.
Yep. So,
I mean, I've said this. This is the surreal part of me. To the throwdown these days. So back when I started watching these, like, I was trying... If you notice me in the Twitch chat, I use my real name because I always try to forge connections with folks and become more approachable with it. I didn't know as many people at the time. I didn't recognize people by name, but now it's like, I know everybody who's up there, and I'm friends with these folks. I can't even root for anybody because I know all of the contestants at once. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow. Wow, how things changed. All right. I mean, it's a great thing, too, because we know one another, and it's just a smaller world, and we can have those forged bonds. It's remarkable.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to read the question. Are you ready? Here was the question that broke the throwdown. 15 points. Will's arrogant cousin Hillary appeared in an episode of NBC's sitcom Blossom. Another episode of Blossom featured Don Novello playing the role of Father Guido Sarducci, and Father Guido Sarducci also popped up on an episode of Married with Children. Stay with me here. David Faustino's character Bud Bundy also popped up on the Fox Network sitcom Parker Lewis Can't Lose. In another episode of Parker Lewis Can't Lose, Parker crosses paths with grown-up Eddie Haskell, who of course we all remember from Leave It to Beaver. His next-door neighbors, June, Wally, and Beaver Cleaver, were all characters in an episode of The Love Boat. Now there's this other episode of The Love Boat where all of Charlie's Angels are on board. In an episode of Charlie's Angels, Dan Tana shows up from Vegas, but it's not important right now. Remember when I said that Parker Lewis had crossed paths with Eddie Haskell? Well, Eddie also popped up on an episode of Hi Honey, I'm Home. So did Gail Gordon's character, Mr. Moody, who you might remember from The Lucy Show. There's an episode of The Lucy Show where Lucy crosses paths with Private Gomer Pyle, USMC, who of course originally appeared on The Andy Griffith Show, which is a spinoff of Make Room for Daddy. On an episode of Make Room for Daddy, Danny encounters Buddy Sorrell, one of Alan Brady's writers on The Dick Van Dyke Show. Alan Brady later appeared on Mad About You, where Ursula was the twin sister of Phoebe from Friends, and Phoebe's friend Chandler Bing showed up on Caroline in the City, where Caroline draws a popular comic strip that his friend drew by Daphne Moon, the caretaker from Dr. Fraser Crane's disabled father, Dr. Crane. He used to hang out at a Boston bar called Cheers, where Norm Griffin, Carlyle Clotter, Dr. Auschlander, Dr. Westfall, built on a landmark 1980 broadcast building that Dr. Auschlander, Dr. Westfall never existed. And in all that shows I mentioned the question are logically figments of the imagination of Tommy Westfall, who is the only character who demonstrably existed on what beloved medical drama?
I mean, yeah. I mean, where do we start with this? Like, there are.
I need a nap after reading.
It could be said
that.
There are 419 Tommy Westfall multiverse shows.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go through them all, but that question could have been made even longer, which is remarkable if you think about it.
It could have been a whole show.
Oh, it could have been the entire Throwdown. 419 shows?
Yeah.
Like, you give me a letter of the alphabet, I can name pretty much any of them that had a crossover. Like, even shows on the Disney Channel, the current Disney Channel, have had crossovers with this. I mean, it basically is the Kevin Bacon of TV shows. It's just... Sane Elsewhere was a question elsewhere. What a tremendous job by Adam. Just,
and,
oh my goodness.
By the way, Aaron Solomon, who played during the Throwdown, who was also the current executive, he was executive producer of, I forget what he's executive producer right now, I think Pyramid. He goes, confused? You won't be after this episode of Soap.
Yeah. I mean, the quips were great. Like, they were... Everyone was really quick on the draw with that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I guess got news. Hang on.
Ooh, we got breaking news.
So, yeah. Buzzer schedules past August 19. One of the sweep airings is going to go to season 4.
Ooh, you know what that means? That's the changeover.
It is, yep. But that's why I thought I'd mention that. That's very interesting. I just got broken. That was not planned.
Link me to that, because I want to see the rest of that schedule and see if anything else happens.
I didn't get the full thing. I was just pinged to that by a nice webmaster, Carl.
Mm. All right. I think I know how to... Oh, wait, I needed that, because that's something we're going to talk about next. But getting back to the Throwdown, this also brings us some sad news. The Throwdown is going on hiatus, which was announced by Travis Griffin at the end of the Throwdown.
Yeah, and I mean, I hate to say it, and everyone does a great job, but when they said one final Throwdown on the page well before this weekend, you kind of felt like something was up. Yeah, I mean, I didn't know the full details of it, but like, boy, that's specifically ominous.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it comes back past 2021, because it's the best thing. It really is.
Yep.
And I always want to go to one. If it doesn't, I'll go to the one out east around here. But, you know, I mean, it was always a meeting place for a lot of the people. It got the people I got together through BioVow to meet them through my trivia friends. And it's kind of remarkable how this all branched off.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, it originally started as Home Game. It originally started as Home Game Enterprise, where they would do bar stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And do bar games. Then they decided to do a charity stream where they partnered up. I believe they did partner up with Corey Annotato, Christian Carrion, and Bob Haig. They were originally called Game Show Marathon West. They did three of those, and they had a falling out. Change went from Marathon to Throwdown.
Yeah, and then Corey is, I mean, the question is... what the difference is between the two, and I don't think there is really all that much of one. I mean, and that's a compliment to both programs, too. I don't think really much needs to change about either one in terms of its presentation and how gaming works and so forth.
I don't think so either, but hopefully something fills that second void. I would like to think that there will be. I'm just not sure who would have the funds for it, because the big thing I think
when it comes down to it, is the solvency of the project. Because as great as it is to have the charity, and I'm glad it's done like that, the charity money is not money that really helps keep the project afloat. It's a noble cause, and I'm glad, again, I'm glad it's done, but it doesn't really help anybody keep these things going. You still gotta rent out the space. You still gotta get all the software. You gotta get all the people and so forth out there. It's not a cheap enterprise. I mean, even Trivia Nationals with Dakota last year had some issues about what was going on with there behind the scenes, and that's why it split off in that respect.
Yep.
And it's being abridged this year as a result of that. I mean, the solvency of these things, I think that's something that I would change in the future, honestly. And I mean, I don't judge the fact they don't do it, and it's actually amazing that they haven't had to do it, but have two donations, one for the kids and one for making sure the project stays alive. That can't be solely on the runners anymore. It just can't be. I mean, it's great that the community gets this, but there has to be some way to keep it afloat. If it's admission, if it's a donation box, you got to do something. I mean, it's unfortunate it has to come to this, but sometimes the realities of life are not that great.
Okay, getting back to what we were talking about earlier, when it comes to the schedules and what's going to be
Yep.
happening.
Yeah, those are sure I want to see in the Throwdown. Supermarket sweep. We're going to go into the Walmart Supercenter when it comes back, and we're going to actually do it live. Can we make that happen? That would be freaking amazing. Like,
Who
can you
knows?
imagine the marketing on that? A live supermarket sweep? That would be amazing television.
Yeah.
Well, they did in the 50s.
When I'm seeing it scheduled, Sail of the Century continues to go on into 88. 8/31, 98. I'm doing the same date as Supermarket Sweep goes into season four. They go on to 8/31/1988, which I believe is end of Summer Bash Week, which is another teen tournament, teen week. Temptation is almost going on to 2008 episodes, which is insane to me. Aside from that, nothing else changes. Which is interesting to me because they should be getting on, probably later on, they'll do new episodes of What's My Line and To Tell the Truth and Password. Let me check a week later. No, okay. So yeah, that is the latest full week. I'm checking weekends and see if there's anything changed. Now you see it's still there, and I doubt that will ever move. No, nothing changes. So yeah, that is the big thing for Pressure Luck. But I mean, for you know what I mean, for Supermarket Sweep. Yeah, you gotta love the breaking news.
Exactly. Again, I talk about spontaneity of, I think, one of my favorite parts of game shows, possibly even more than the winning. I mean, when it happens here, it's great.
So let's just hope the Throwdown comes back because I want to go to one. You want to go to one. Hopefully, it comes back in 2021.
Yeah, unless
Who
they get like
knows?
a giant donation. Like, if I get some of the positions I'm trying to get at ESPN, I will do my darndest to give a good chunk of change to that to see that get off the ground.
But I also know a lot of the boys, some of the main movers and shakers of that have a lot of work coming up, especially Travis Griffin, who, while during the Throwdown, is also working on Punchline.
Oh,
And that is current. They take day of. So, it's just a headache to just trying to manage that, and God bless him for doing that.
yeah, that is wild. Impressive too. Like, my goodness. How these folks did all this. Between that and Some of the trolls that the caddies want to get every single time, multiple times. It's a lot of work. Be it operating the games, playing the games, because honestly, those games will take a lot out of you. I mean, as fun as they are. And honestly, on the chat side of things, trying to get things back to order, and honestly, playing them at home, too. I love doing that.
So, shall we move on?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there are certainly strategies to be had in the games, and there are certainly strategies to be had, you know, as they would be with game shows in the blood and the flesh with physical props.
And thus brings us to another magical moment called Just the Strats, Ma'am. Here, we break down a show and try to give you the best tips and trips and tricks in order for you to win a trip on a game show and also win lots and lots of, I believe it's what they call, moolah. And it's play a long time, folks. What we'd like you to do for this one is go to gameshowtheory.com/apps/cs/cs.html. Now, what you are seeing is the Card Sharks calculator to the 2019 Card Sharks.
Yes, it is a Markov chain simulator that satisfies the following conditions and factors that determine the game. The value of your current card that is face up, the number of cards that are face down, the value of your base card, the position of your base card, your opponent's base card, if the position of your opponent's base card, if you won the survey, and the number of questions remaining. All of these matter. But those are the simple eight factors. So there are about 1.5 million possible game states that it can exist. So if you have those pieces of data, you can basically determine what your chances are of victory at a given moment. And if you go to that site, it will tell you your chances of winning, if you should, what you should do, if you should freeze, if you should pass, and so forth like that. And obviously, on the micro level, there is the basic strategy of the cards of what you should do with them. With a two or an ace up, 0% chance of better cards, 86.3% of worse cards, or 13.7% of the same cards. So obviously you want to keep those. Three and a king is 15.7 better, 70.6 worse. 13.7 is going to be the case for all of the same cards except an eight, which is obviously going to be 5.9%. Four or queen is 31.4% better, 54.9% worse, and 13.7 of course same. Those are all the ones you should keep. Anything else, so five, jack, six, 10, seven, nine, eight, you should change. Five and jack, I get it. As the article says on Game Show Theory, I get it. But it's close. 47.1% better cards, 39.2% worse cards, and 13.7% change. It is very close. And the reason you change that is because the better cards is still going to be not that. It's still sub 50%. You're more likely to get the same cards or worse cards. So why bother? Change that. 6 or a 10, 62.7% better cards, only 23.5% chance of a worse card, so that's about 3 to 1. Change those. 7 or 8 is 78.4% better cards and 7.8% worse cards. That's a 10 to 1 ratio. Obviously, you should change that. And then 8 is 94.1% better cards. And of course, there's no chance of getting a worse card than 8. And an 8. And a worse card, obviously, is not the same as the same card. So don't tell me. Don't give me that, please. Because we're talking about differential cards.
That's absolutely
right. I don't understand why we keep a 6 or a 10. There's no reason for that at all. And it's happened on the show.
That is true. So let's go through a scenario by using the calculator. We're going to do round one. You did not win the...
Left.
Four questions left. We're going to start. We're going to play out a game.
All right.
Where I am going to control the cards, and Jessica will be playing the game. And she will play both decks.
All right, I like this.
All right.
All right. So, as long as you let me know what cards to put where, and who's won the toss-up, who the active player is, and then we can play from there.
Okay, red is active player. They win
Okay.
the question.
Okay.
And they start out with a 7.
Seven, okay.
And knowing that you can change it if you like.
Yes, and the correct choice there is exchange, and you have a 51% chance of winning right now on the red.
The 7 becomes a 4.
Right, so let me see if I can do this. Nope, okay, so I'm going to change this to a four here. And
Yep.
now we have a go, which is presented as that, and we've got a 52.3% chance of winning right now. So it says go. So I assume
Yeah.
we're going to go.
Yep.
Right.
You got a 9.
All right, red has a nine. Okay. And that has a 52.1% chance of winning, but it says to go. And now I'm trying to remember. Now, forgive me about this. This is the stupidest question I'll ever ask. Would we know blues because they have not won any cards? Would we know what their starting card is? No, I don't think we would yet.
Blues have no card showing.
Okay, so no card showing. Okay, well, it says go on, by the way. Go on.
You got an 8.
And then I assume we said lower because, the odds. Okay,
Yeah.
so we know that's out, so we're gonna clear that out actually. Because we know it's not right. Because, it was an oh wait, it was a nine? Yeah. So we went
Yeah.
lower and it's an eight. Yep. Okay, so it got that right. Now it says to freeze. Okay. So we have a four, a nine, and an eight, right?
You have a 59.2% chance of winning at sacrifice.
I see 54.5.
Hold on, let me unfreeze. Okay, because if you're back at the base card, the action says freeze.
Yep, that's what I see. I still see freeze regardless, so we'll do that
So we'll
regardless.
freeze on the 8. You
Yep.
now have a 59.2% chance of winning. But the active player is now blue because they have won the toss-up question.
Right, so now we're going to change that to blue, and we're going to change it to three questions left because they've won a toss-up. So
Right.
obviously that resets the odds, and we just have to wait for the first card to be revealed.
You got a king.
We got a king. I just have to ask, are we doing this with like a live deck so we can see how it plays out or a card simulator?
No, I'm doing it with physical cards.
Cool. That's awesome. All right, so obviously it says to play on here, and we've got a 49.5% chance of winning, but we have to consider that's not bad when we're down three cards to one to be about even odds at that point. So we're going to play this on.
You got a
Obviously, I assume
jack.
we'll go lower. We're going to go lower with the jack. And we're going to go on. We have a 50.3% chance of winning. And that's interesting to me because, and it kind of makes sense too, because we have two higher end cards relative to what the middle cards are of the player who might not get control. But we've had two higher end cards that favors us, and we're only one card behind, but yet we're still favored. But we're going to go on at this point.
You have a 3.
A three, okay. All right, and now we're up to 55.2. I'm surprised it's actually that little bit of a much of an increment. But we're going to play on from that. 55.2, we've upped ourselves.
And now you got a 6.
Now we've got a 6. I think it's going to say freeze here, but barely. No, it says play on. We're going to go on because it's 55.1. And my guess is because the count right now is plus 1, and we would expect to see something around an 8 or a 9 next, is my guess, if my card counting skills are good. And play on.
No, you see a 3.
Now we see a three. Okay, so we're gonna wipe those off. All right, interesting. Interesting.
We wipe those off back to the king.
Back to the king. Okay.
Active
So
player
we're
is
gonna.
now red, but you can't change.
The winning player is red. Oh wait, yep. We're gonna go back to red. Three. Whoops. All right. So we're at an eight.
Yeah, free shot.
Yeah, we got a free shot here. So we gotta go on here. So, you can play it either way you would want. I personally would suggest that we go higher because nine is a neutral card and four is a negative card, so that puts the count at minus one, relatively speaking. It should be said the widget doesn't account for that. And right now here, I'm applying my own card counting skills.
Okay, you have a jack.
And that's correct. See, This is where it's useful to count cards when you play card games, folks. I'll teach anyone how to do it. It's so easy. All right, obviously we have to go. And 59.9% chance of winning here. So we're going to take lower.
You got a 10.
You got a 10. I think it's close to freeze point. Well, it says go. And our odds of winning are still good. So it says go on. And let's see what the count is. See if I agree with this actually. So 4 is minus 1. 9 and 8 are neutral. 10's a neutral. It's a neutral count. I'm surprised it's actually telling us to go on. But it says to. All right.
You got a 7.
Yeah, wow. Look at this. And now it says to freeze. At 66.3%. We're going to freeze right here.
And when it says freeze, we go back to two questions remaining.
Yep.
Your
Yep.
actions are go, but you haven't, but this is, I haven't refigured yet to winning the toss-up yet, because that hasn't happened yet. And we have no active player right now. But
Yeah, we have no active player yet, but we have to
freezing, you
determine
would have
who.
a 70.1% chance of winning.
Yeah, and I mean, this is hypothetical, but the reason why this is kind of interesting, too, is because when most of you who are listening to this right now think to freeze on maybe the 10, like, freezing the game is very counterintuitive in this respect. I want to talk about the math in this a little bit before we play on, because I do want to play this out. It's important. There are very definitive points of which we should go on. A 6 or a 10, actually, we should go on in card 2, and that's as far as it's an absolute one. And it only decreases, we should only go on a 5 or a jack at our absolute outer limits on 3, 4 or queen on 4, and then only on 5 or 6, we should only go for the 2 or the ace. And of course, that's sequentially. There are some maybe decisions to be made on some other cards, but again, it's counterintuitive because we're going to actually freeze on an 8 in card 3. We're going to freeze actually on a 5 or a jack in card 5. But remember, we don't want to lose progress. Freezing is not obvious, and maybe it's based upon a base card. If you have a better base card, then you should be willing to play off of what an 8 is, and so forth. And that's just basically counting cards at its core. Because if you're adding to the count, which again, if you don't know what a count is, it means it's a high card, which means you add plus one, like a face card, or an ace. And then if we have a low card, which is subtracting from the count, minus one, like a 2 to a 4, then we're just going to subtract it that away. Now, obviously, we're going to be more aggressive if we win the question, right? Because we're going to have the option to change the card. Conversely, if we don't, it's going to actually be more aggressive because we can't actually lose control of the cards to the opponent. So, on every single card, if we lose the toss-up, we're going to go for it on card 2 and 3. And we're only going to freeze on a 7 or 9 in card 5. In absolute worst situation, we are maybe going to go for it on a 7, 8, or 9 in card 4, but it's remarkable. The one thing I should point out, though, card 7 if you win, or card 8 if you freeze, excuse me, card 7 or card 8 if you get to those points are always freeze points. Even if you get a 2 or an ace, because remember about the push roll, you don't get to do it again. It's not like it's absolute.
True.
So, now, with that in mind, we should start playing this out a little more when we have two cards to go.
So blue wins the toss-up, still has the king.
Lou wins the toss-up and still has the king. Okay. Well, I assume I think the right decision, we can both agree, is obviously to keep the card, because we talked about the micro values of each card, and obviously king is a good choice because it's a great start card too. So we're gonna go lower, obviously.
A 2.
The
Now,
two.
here's
All right.
where things get weird. Because if you look at the tracker, your chances of winning are 40.2%. Hold on.
Yep, that's
So
right.
there's only one question left. 44.5% chance of winning, because now we only have one question left.
Yeah, because at that
And you're
point,
being told to freeze.
well, I'm getting a go on that. I'm at one question left. you definitely want to go on a two on the second card, for sure, based upon the table I guess, right? And that's why I wanted to read the math out about that, because a two is only debatable if you a two we're always going to go on unless it's card number seven, in a given sequential order. That does not mean card number seven. It could mean card eight if, like, let's say you froze on card number two because it was like a seven to nine, for instance. We're always going to go on a two on the second card because you're only risking the two itself at that point. We're going to play this.
And it would be
So
an
go
ace.
higher on this. And it's an ace. Look at this. Look at this mess. And now I'm getting a freeze.
And I think you're getting a freeze because there's only one question left. That would mean sudden death.
Right, exactly. And the thing is, too, about that, remember, your opponent messes up. I mean, they lose the game. And it's you're unfavored at that point. And even worst case, it gets passed to you. You're playing off an ace at that point. Because you don't want to risk the ace at that point. Because you're seven. So I think that makes sense in terms of logic and in game theory. Because think about what you're risking at that point. You're going from a king. You're removing some of the high variance cards, like. Variance. Higher bound cards like a two and an ace, which is starting to centralize the data a little bit more. Because the more you play with, like, if you play blackjack with one deck, right, you're going to be able to know what cards are remaining left in the deck if you're able to count it. So if you can centralize that, it makes it a lot easier to know what's coming up.
Exactly.
So we're on to the last
Now,
card.
last question. Blue wins the toss-up.
Lewin's toss up, okay.
And it's now up to red to pass. Now up to pass to red. And you have no choice but to go off the seven.
Yeah, so red is going to be, and red, as an active player, only has a 20.8% chance to win. Now, remember what we said earlier, though. We had it about, I think about, let's see, at this point, you would have, yeah, red does not win the toss-up. Red is only going to be at 20.8% chance. Blue, by comparison, should have one that's in the low teens. So that's about doubling your odds by passing at that point. Doubling your
Yeah,
odds.
13.6%.
I thought before I set the simulator that'd be maybe about, I don't know, maybe about 56% increase. No, we're more than doubling just based upon this specific scenario. So red has control of the cards and a 20.8% chance of doing it. Any questions blown, and that's it. 4-1 odds that if blue wins the game off three cards because you're being smart about passing and you're looking at what relatively cards are in there. So now we got to play off this seven for red. And let's look at the count too. I mean, presumably most players are going to go higher, but we're going to assume both players here are mathematicians and actually playing the count too. So four minus one, neutral, neutral, up, up. It's plus one. Plus one's right on the border. We'll probably still go higher. It's going to be close, though. It's going to be a tough call. We're probably still going to go higher, but it wouldn't surprise me if this is off. Even if the fact that it's a seven. Like,
How
'cause
about
this is really
another
closer to a
seven?
seven and a half. Sorry?
It's another seven.
Well, and that's a loss.
Yep.
Do 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 do. Yep. But yeah. So blue wins this game because they picked the smart math. Look at that. Granted, again, I emphasize, math is an imperfect science. Bayesian theorems, confidence intervals are traditionally 95% for a reason. They are not perfect, but they usually do work. Remember, though, maybes are important situations. Your base card is extraordinarily important about how you progress and how far you're going to go in a given turn within the server. If you have a 7 or 8 on card 2, maybe you go on depending on your own base card if you win. Freeze if it's an 8 on card 3, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, maybe depending on that. Maybe for a 5 or a jack on card 4, freeze on 6 to 10. Then it goes from a 3 king, 4 queen, or maybes on card 5, then freeze on anything from a 5 to a jack. Freeze from anything from a 3 to an 8 on card 6. Again, this is not card 6, but it's number 6 of what you drew. Go on a 2 or an ace. And card 7, you're always going to freeze. And of course, if you don't win the survey, then be more aggressive because you don't have to give the opponent the free look. The turn just ends. And that is a tremendous advantage of losing the survey, remarkably. Yeah, you don't get the card switch, but you might not necessarily need the card switch, which is, I think, personally interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You should always go on card 2 and 3, no matter if you get an 8 or not. Now, of course, in the old days, you wouldn't do that because 5 is a relatively smaller interval, and there's, and I mean, there's a lot more point of which you should freeze in that respect. So if you take it as an equivalent card to like a 6 or a 5, you should freeze actually on a 6 or 10 on those based upon the old days. But you wanna only maybe consider stopping on 7 to 9 on card 4. It's kind of remarkable. I don't think people would think to be this aggressive with it, but it makes sense because the built-in advantage of not giving your opponents the cards back. And chances are, if you lose on that, like let's say you're playing, you have a good base card, and let's say you get an ace, you get a, let's say you get a jack, and then you get an eight. You've lost a jack and an eight if you lose that. You really haven't lost that much, but there is no downside to really doing that. I mean, it's not, I mean, there could be downside, but I mean, they're really, I mean, you're losing an 8. Is that really the worst thing in the world? No.
Absolutely. And now, we like to thank everybody for enjoying this wonderful little conversation on how to win the main game on Card Sharks.
Yes.
The betting strategies for the money cards on Card Sharks can happen later.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I would say consider, and Game Show Theory doesn't mention this, but personally, in my opinion, is consider the keep strategy guide that I mentioned about how you want to keep the two ace, three king, four queen, and then what you want to do is because relatively adjust for the fact of what you will get for expectations of your probabilities, adjust your weight according to that. So let's say you get a two or an ace. You should be betting 86.3% of what you have at that point. Because that is the probability that you will get a card that is... Actually, excuse me, it's better than that. It is 94.1% of what you have. Because I counted the two and the ace as the same card there. So I'm glad I caught myself. But 94.1 is what you should bet on a given two or an ace, and of course, that is to start out. I can't emphasize that one enough, because if we're talking about how we start out versus how we go versus progression, I don't know if the deck is shuffled between the main game and the money cards. It may not be, but if you're keeping count of the cards, then you should really adjust your weights according to that, relatively speaking, to what you know the count is. Or if you can really memorize all the cards, none of the counters I know would do this, but if you can do that, then you know it's due to come up and what hasn't been pulled. But that's why people use a count when they... A count. That's why it's called card counters. Because we don't really count, like, the spades or whatever. We count what the relative weight of the card is. Sure. And obviously you don't bet everything because pushes are a loss for you. Which is fine. It's just introducing what we know to be the proper variance in the bet.
Right. So we'll talk more about that next time out.
Yeah, next time. And if you want to send me a message about that, or just send it on the Game Show Gumbo page, or me a message, or just do it on the YouTube page, I will answer with you in better detail about what I would bet in a given situation within the cards, and I will explain that in better detail for you, for your individual case.
Yep. I need a cigarette after that.
Yep. And now you see what I do at 3 in the morning every night, because I'm just running all this crazy shit. I mean, I'll look at Game Show Theory because I got to credit them for this and a lot of the stuff, but what I like to do is I look at their stuff as a baseline, and then I try to see about how we can improve upon it and how we can apply it in a greater varieties of contexts. Because as great of a job that they do, and all credit in the world to Dave, such a great writer, some of his stuff has not the full practicalities for the shows themselves. So what I try to do for that is, okay, which part of this did he not cover, and how can I apply the same theory to those aspects of the shows. And that's why I wanted to mention the money cards a little bit, because his page does not cover that individually. So.
All right. Now we can take a breath. And the nominees are... The Primetime Emmy noms were released a couple of weeks ago, just right after we recorded the show. And shall we talk about who's going for what?
Yep.
All right. Competition Program, which is The Amazing Race for CBS, American Ninja Warrior for NBC, Nail It for Netflix, RuPaul's Drag Race for VH1, Top Chef for Bravo, and The Voice for NBC. I gotta be honest, I think both of us know who's winning it this year.
Who do you have?
I have RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah. It would not surprise me. It would certainly make a statement in this day and age, certainly. I mean, you have the interesting effect of what the news tabloids would be of that, and I think there's certainly that baked into it about what the effects of voting a given show is, too. Beyond its own merits, too.
Yep. Some shows that I could possibly see winning. American Ninja Warrior, I honestly could see winning.
Yeah.
Because last year it had the superstar appearance of Casey Catanzaro, who is now wrestling for WWE right now. And I also expect the voters to be stupid and boring and vote The Amazing Race.
Well, that's the unfortunate part. Sometimes vanilla wins.
Mm-hmm. It's tasteless for me. I will come out and say it. I hate The Amazing Race.
It's not quite what it was, that's for sure.
I hated it in the beginning. I just thought it was garbage in the full sense of the word. Now we have a host for reality or a competition program. Making a lot of Price is Right haters mad, James Corden with The World's Best. Ellen DeGeneres for Ellen's Game of Games. Something that'll make a lot of the Game Show News Net boys angry. Marie Kondo with Tidying Up with Marie Kondo. Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman with Making It. And RuPaul for RuPaul's Drag Race. Up to you. Who do you see winning?
I think they'll probably vote RuPaul on this, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, I think it's the predictability factor in this case.
Yep, and plus it's gotten a lot of attention, a lot of press this year, and I honestly think it'll do well as well. Other shows that aren't competition shows but are nominated for various Primetime Emmys. Production Design for Variety, Reality, or Competition Series. The Voice from NBC is in for it, but it's going up against At Home with Amy Sedaris, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, and Queer Eye for Netflix. I do think Last Week Tonight with John Oliver won that one.
That's the one that gets the most press. I mean, if it didn't, that would be very surprising.
Mm-hmm. Amazing Race, American Ninja, well, directing for reality program, we'll say. Amazing Race, American Ninja Warrior, RuPaul's Drag Race, and Shark Tank are the competition programs. Queer Eye being the non-competition program in that aspect. I gotta say, either Queer Eye or American Ninja Warrior wins that one.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're going to look at the... I think they're going to get the ones that get the most intrigue to them on a given episode. Which, I mean, that's kind of the point of the awards, I know. But I think those two stick out above the rest in that regard.
Then we have casting
for a reality program. We have Born This Way for A&E, Queer Eye for Netflix, RuPaul's Drag Race for VH1, Shark Tank for ABC, The Voice for NBC. Who do you think is going to win?
Could you repeat those again? I'm sorry.
Born This Way for A&E, Queer Eye for Netflix, RuPaul's Drag Race, Shark Tank, and The Voice.
I'm going to say a tie.
Between?
Off the board. Between RuPaul's Drag Race and Queer Eye.
I think you might be right on that one. Yeah. One of those two will win.
Yeah. That's just it. It's so close, right? Like, I could see it. I honestly could see a tie there. And then be a fun moment to see on TV.
Then you have choreography for variety or reality program. So you think you could dance in World of Dance are the only two listed. And I don't really care about either one of them. Do you?
Yeah, I was going to say, I wish I could give more about this, but I really can't.
Right. Cinematography for a reality program. Deadliest Catch, Life Below Zero, or Survivor?
I'll probably give this to Survivor.
Oh. Well, it's the same cinematography you had the past two seasons because they're in Fiji. I do think Life Below Zero will win.
I hope you're right. I think people are just saying the common name, which is really like, But I'd be glad to be proven wrong about that.
Costumes for a variety, nonfiction, or reality programming. Dancing with the Stars. Homecoming, a film by Beyonce. The Masked Singer. RuPaul's Drag Race. Saturday Night Live. Who do you think wins?
Well, I mean, it's not on the radar as many people as it was, but Masked Singer got so much attention. I think that's going to snatch it.
Yep. I do, too. Picture editing for structured reality or competition program. There's only three of them. Amazing Race, Queer Eye, or RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars.
I gotta give it to James.
James?
Yeah.
Who? Oh, Queer Eye. Okay.
Yeah.
Original interactive program. First Man VR by Universal Pictures. NASA's InSight Mars Landing. Traveling While Black by Oculus. You vs. Wild by Netflix. And even though we talked about them in negative terms tonight, HQ Trivia with Warner Brothers, a life and interactive animation first.
I thought this was cool. What it was is that they put Scott Rogowski, they flew him out to Australia, and they made him a Lego to host the show. This was pretty freaking cool. I think that wins, and it's going to be really awkward too, because, you know, Scott's with Daz. But that was so innovative. I mean... It's so far out there that it's great. Like, no one else has really attempted something to that degree. Like, I think that was the first show ever to be hosted as a Lego. Like, not even just like a game show, like any genre. I think that wins, and it's going to be weird. But that's what's going to make it great.
Okay. There are some other nominations for various series. Anthony Anderson, who was the host of To Tell the Truth, is up for an Emmy for his role in Blackish, lead actor in a comedy series. Jane Lynch, who hosts Hollywood Game Night, guest actress in a comedy series for The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and RuPaul's Drag Race Untucked, unstructured reality program for VH1. I like all three of them. They don't stand a chance.
Yep.
It was nice to talk about it. I don't think I'm going to watch it.
No, I mean, I'll find out the results. If there's anything stunning, I'm sure I will find about it through the social media first.
Absolutely. Just like how we found about Supermarket Sweep going into season 4 on Buzzer while we're doing the show.
Exactly.
Here's the thing. They now have... They've aired all of season 2, all of season 3.
Yeah. I mean, I know we got one of the seasons on Amazon Prime. I would like to see that get some more, too. Or...
40 episodes of the 2000 season, so the PAX revival.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. We need to get more on Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why not? Like, even if it winds up costing a little bit more, I'm sure people would pony up the cash for that, so.
Yeah. You know what I was also hoping might happen? You know how they have the Stop Shop and Play block that they're advertising on Buzzer? You move Password Plus from 8 to 9. You take away that run of Supermarket Sweep, and you talk to Stone Stanley to get Shop Do You Drop.
Yeah, I mean, just like they used to do it 20 years ago.
On Lifetime, yeah.
Yeah.
And on PAX.
I was going to say, hell, PAX did that too, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was the old 6 to 7 p.m. hour here.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Supermarket Sweep Shop 2 dropped Lifetime, called it the Big Time.
Yeah, and then sometimes you would have Debt in there for a little bit.
You had Debt in there from 96 to 98, but that was also during the time where Shop was canceled. And they moved to the Family Channel.
Yes, right. Yeah.
And honestly, I think it would have still been on the Family Channel if not for Fox buying them out. Because they still had the mind of being that wholesome Family Channel aspect.
Yeah.
But then Fox came and just went, nah, this isn't going to fly. We don't need to be too family friendly. Anyway, that's going to do it for this wonderful edition of the Gumbo Cast. There's some people who I'd like to thank. That is our lovely Patreons. And if you want to be a backer of this podcast, go to www.patreon.com/gameshowgumbo. And you can become like one of the fabulous people like Playa Bogart, Brian Henniger, Ian McClinn, Frank Driscoll, Alfonso Smith, D3US. Oh my goodness, I forgot a name. I thought I had it written down, but I don't have it written down. This is kind of embarrassing. Isn't this fun? No.
You're going to double one next time.
No, I'm grabbing it. I just got to grab an episode of Game Show Gumbo. Because you're also in the end credits. Right here. Don Pascal. There you are, Don Pascal. Thank you, Don Pascal, for being a great Patreon backer, Don Pascal. I think that sorted it out. And for as little as a dollar, you get this podcast 2 days in advance. So, if you're listening to the podcast right now and you're a Patreon backer, thank you. And if you're not a Patreon backer and you want this podcast 2 days early, become a backer on Patreon. You'll get the next one 2 days in advance.
And all the other fine folks. Become one of our patrons and I'll run something for you in terms of game theory. I'm pretty sure I can do it pretty successfully. So, get a game situation and we'll run it.
Maybe for our $10 Patreon backers.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me. I'll add that to the Patreon in 2 days.
Yep. Oh, it makes sense.
Yeah. All right.
I'd like to thank all of you for listening, and take care of yourself and each other. Bye, everyone.